Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook, / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter, at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Jambo fellow adventurers, this is Mike Dooley.
Hi, this is Dr. John Gray, author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Hi, this is Marcy Shymoff.
Hi, this is Jack Canfield from The Secret.
Hi, this is Tim Ferriss, author of The 4-Hour Workweek, 4-Hour Body, and The 4-Hour Chef.
This is Andrea Owen. And
hi, this is Lisa Nichols.
Hey, this is John Assaraf.
Hi, this is Jim Quick.
Hey, this is Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income.
Hi, this is Beth Hanichewski.
Hello, this is Les Brown, Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy. And you're listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Life Show. Listen, continue to listen, and you'll discover your greatness.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Yes, it is. Welcome. You know what day it is? Do you know what day it is? Well, it's our birthday. That's right. It's been one full year since we pushed start the first day. And I've fumbled around these little knobs and spent more time looking at these knobs than I did chatting into the mic. But it's been a whole year. Lots of water passed under this bridge. Lots of growth happened. Yeah, lots of great reviews and lots of stories. When I travel around the country or around the world and people who listen in, they come up and share a little bit what's going on. And there's been some good stuff going on. And if you're moving in the direction of your dreams and goals and you got a kick-ass life attitude or you're a kick-ass life practitioner, then you're probably feeling a lot healthier, happier. Your friendships are blossoming and, you know, your bank account's going to grow with it. Remember the saying, the more that I grow myself, or my wealth can only grow to the extent I'm willing to grow myself. And so what do we do on a first year anniversary, first year birthday? Well, you know, I was going to bring Mike, the producer, on, but unfortunately he's traveling today. So I thought, you know, what shall I do? And so as I sat here and I pondered the question, I realize there's been a lot of shows that we've done from all different parts of the world. And so I thought maybe I'll put a little compilation together, just a few, for a couple of minutes. And then, you know, what a great honor to pass the show over to you, the listeners. And we had one particular listener who sort of spoke to me on Facebook and said, you know, for me to live a kick-ass life, I would love to get to interview you. And so I think what I'm going to do on the first year anniversary is actually let one of the listeners interview me. But I'm going to do it as a surprise. No big setup, no prep. Just phone her up. She's in Australia. Push record and see what the heck happens. See what good stuff comes out. But before that, you know, I got some people to thank. You know, Michael, the producer, Michael O'Neill, who's worked tirelessly behind the scenes. Thank you, Michael, for a great year. We've done a lot of great things. And I always say if one person's life changes, it's worth the energy. And it does take a lot of energy to pull this off 3 times a week. And so Michael and Denise, my assistant, who again works behind the scenes to run things and make sure I'm sitting at the mic when I'm meant to be and helps me coordinate our guests. Of course, Jen, who's always a supporter and has to tiptoe around when I'm recording. We're just moving into a new place where I have a big studio, which gives her a little bit more freedom. But, you know, lots of people to thank. And, of course, all the listeners, all of the guests who have come on and added so much of their wisdom. So, yeah, but you know what I'm like. I don't just sit here and babble, although some of you say I do. I have to play a song or two. I think this is a song that's a little apt, don't you?
It's your birthday.
Happy birthday to you. You've been here all the way. Now, if you're listening to this show for the very first time, this may be a weird one, but obviously there's some good stuff waiting for you. You can go to thekickasslife.com and you can catch up on some of these shows. And if you're not sure where to start, go to the top of the page. It's like a start here button, and it'll give you sort of some of the top shows. you can listen into. But yeah, so why don't we do this? Why don't we have a little listen to some of the wacky places that I have found myself over this last 12 months, you know? And I tell you, I'm just skimming the surface here. And I just, as I started to listen to this myself, I almost forget. I forget how lucky I am, really, and what a great life I lead. And, you know, I mean, that's really the basis of a kick-ass life is all about results. And, you know, I just know that as I listen to some of these places, and I just didn't have time to go through and pull out some of them, even my most favorites. I had to go and dig them out and find the exact cut. And, you know, I just don't have time for that today. So, but I just dragged a few out. So listen to these, and then we'll make someone's wish. One of our listeners can will be put on the spot as I call her and push record. So see what happens. Oh, dear. I'm so full of myself. I can't even stand myself. Here we go. So I want to welcome you to the show and maybe just start by describing where I'm sitting. I'm actually in my car. It's the day after Boxing Day. So, hello, hello. Well, here I am. I'm sitting in Seattle Airport. Well, hello, hello, or should I say g'day, g'day. Here I am in Sydney, Australia, and extremely excited to be here. I landed yesterday morning at, well, we're a day ahead of you. That's kind of weird, eh? I'm actually, I am calling you from the future. This is your future speaking back at you. And your future is looking very bright, very sunny. So I just want to welcome you to this week's show. I find myself in an incredible situation. You can hear the sound behind, but it's I'm in Bali, and I heard a lot about cockfighting. I don't agree with it. I'm not condoning it. So welcome back. And if you listen behind me right now, you'll hear the waves crashing onto the beach here. Hopefully it's not too distracting, but I wanted to include you in the experience as I am sitting here. I'm in the Gili Islands. I'm actually recording this live from a swimming pool in Bali with the most stunning views behind. I'm here out in Belize on the island, and I'm actually sitting on the roof of one of the casitas.
Hello, hello. Hi, it's Michael O'Neill in for the gallivanting David Wood. I fully expect David to show up with a picture of him sitting on an elephant any day now. But my guess is that he's going to be back on Tuesday. That's my hope, is that we'll get to hear some awesome stories from Africa.
Now I'm sitting in this beautiful eco-resort in Ubud, which is further north in Bali. It's going to be an interesting show. I'm actually sitting in Brisbane Airport.
What you can hear behind me, there's actually now thousands of bats.
So Jen, how are you feeling right now that the helicopter's landed?
So excited! A little bit nervous.
Jumbo, jumbo. Hey, back from Africa, and you know, like I always start with some gratitudes, and am I ever grateful for some of the people that stepped in, well, all of the people that stepped in while I was away. Yeah, you know, I really am grateful. And, you know, John Assaraf stepped in. That's wonderful to have someone who that caliber of person, you know, New York Times bestselling author. He was on the blockbuster The Secret. And just really, really amazing that he would just step in like that. I was obviously stuck in Africa without the technology that I needed to be able to reach you all, and they rallied around. So, you know, as Jen and I traveled around the world from the Caribbean to Asia to Africa, all the way through North America, Australia, we just feel so blessed in visiting some of the most, you know, beautiful private primitive islands down in Belize, my own private island, and doing two of my own events there this year. I mean, the year's been a full year, and I always think, you know, when you lead a kick-ass life and you look back over a year, it should feel like 10 years. It should feel like 5 years, not like a few seconds. And that's where routine comes in sometimes. You know, if we get into a routine, we do the same things. And I like traditions, but traditions can be, you know, when you look back and you say, you know, every Christmas is exactly the same. While it's great, in some ways, they all mesh together and it's hard. So I do urge you, from time to time to, and we do that every other year. You know, we'll go and spend Christmas in a different place. I did it for 10 years. Every year, every Christmas I spent in a different place. But I do urge you from time to time just to break the tradition and just sort of create a new adventure within the story, just so that when you look back, it creates the space. It creates, it feels like many, many years have passed as opposed to a few seconds, which sometimes happens. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to phone one of our great listeners here. Her name's Michelle Edis, and she's in Australia. I'm going to phone her up. I'm going to put her on the spot, and we're going to see what happens. That's exactly what we'll do, and she's going to interview me, and it's either going to be a cracker or it's not. Now, I guarantee if I'm playing it on this show and you're hearing it, it's probably a cracker. So sit back, relax, and enjoy as I'm put into the hot seat. All the way from Australia. Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, David.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So here you are. You said this would be leading a kick-ass life if you were interviewing me on the show. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So tell us where you're from, Michelle, and where what are you looking out your window right now, if you are looking out of a window?
I am. I'm in Melbourne, in southern part of Australia, and I'm looking out the window into this beautiful cool gray morning, green grass and autumn leaves around me.
That's right, because you're just heading into your winter.
We are.
Yeah, I'm just because you're not in control of the controls here. I'm going to have to be the interviewee and play with the controls.
Okay. I'm sure you're up for that.
So I'm going to have to charge you for this.
Absolutely. As you should.
So Melbourne, you know, I lived in Melbourne quite a while ago. In Parkdale, just outside.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. I was there for a number of months, and it's really funny. You know, I bumped into, I'm walking through Melbourne. I have my son is 6 months old. That's he's 15. So I'll tell you how long ago it was, right? And he hasn't started walking yet. And we're thinking, you know, we're going to stay in Melbourne. And we go to a little tea shop and it's closed. And typical me, I bang on the door. And these two girls answer the door and I say, oh, we're closed. I said, oh, yeah, I know. I said, but I just thought I'd just see if I could get a cup of tea. And they said, oh, I'll come in. And we start chatting. And within an hour, they decided that we could house sit. They were leaving 2 days later. They hadn't found a house sitter. So they left us with this beautiful home. And I remember one of the beautiful parts of it was I had my barbecue outside. And there was a lime tree right by the barbecue. So I would actually pull limes right off the barbecue and I'd cut them up and I'd squeeze them right over the fish. And that was my little, my introduction to Melbourne was two people who met me and within an hour gave me their home for 3 months.
Wow.
How cool was that?
That's really cool. Really, really cool. What makes you do that?
Well, oh, so you're taking over now. Look at you.
I just have to ask.
All right, listen, I want to stop running things here. What makes me do what? You mean squeeze lemons on fish?
No. What makes you just go up and knock on a door even though it's closed?
Well, you know, it's really funny because that's happened even in the last few days. And I think it came from one of the things I want to teach my own sons. And I have them bang on doors a lot, you know. So if they're raising money, I really like them to go and knock on doors. And I've told this story a lot where I take them out there. But the thing was, when I was younger, and I'm trying to think back to when I was a Boy Scout, it probably started. And I grew up in a really, really poor part of England. And so we had a tremendous, you know, I'm talking about Western poverty. So it's like, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's very varying levels of poverty. And you'd see in certain parts of Australia where, you know, your Aboriginal people may be living in a level of poverty that's quite different from maybe the Western part of the country.
For sure.
And so we lived in that kind of real squalor. And I wanted to get my way out of it. And I realized I became a Boy Scout. And in the Boy Scouts, they had a thing called Baba Job Week. And that's how it tells you how long ago it was, right? And so what we'd do is we'd go and knock on doors and we would raise money. And from a young age, I always wanted to raise the most money whenever I did those kinds of things. And I think that's where it started, where I got my confidence. And I mean, back then, I mean, kids would go out. I mean, even as a Cub Scout, I would go out and knock on strangers' doors and offer to do jobs for them. And they could decide how much they paid you. And yeah. and it was crazy. I mean, and some people were really mean. You know, they'd have you work for like 2 hours straight, and then they give you like a, you know, 25 cents or you know, a dollar. And but that's what we used to do back then. I think that's where it started. And my early businesses, I was a window cleaner, chimney sweep. You know, I ran a landscape gardening company, and I also had a decorating company. And every one of those businesses relied on me going and knock. I never used advertising. I just go and knock on people's doors, build a rapport. I always knew that if I could talk to someone and I could build some kind of relationship, that invariably they'd end up doing business with me.
Yes. So that says to me an insatiable curiosity to connect with people, but also the fact that you're very bold and it's the stepping stone for moving forward.
You're telling me I'm bold like my head? Is that what you mean?
No, bold as in fearless.
No, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I was scared, right? I mean, it's not like I don't have the normal feelings. It's like everything I teach, which is this idea that, you know, it's a muscle. And in the beginning, even today, if I have to go and knock on doors, which, I mean, I've done as recently as a few years ago, it's still one of those things where I still have the same anxiety, the same fear, the same apprehension, the same doubt. I know it's there. I just ignore it. And I just know that in the beginning, as I start something, I'm going to be really messy. And that as long as I keep going and if I do a lot of it, in other words, and I teach this to my kids, you know, when they're going out raising money, I'll get them to practice something with me then realize not be attached to anyone in the beginning saying yes, because you know you're going to be crappy. So let's not be attached to any yeses in the beginning. Let's just use that as, I call it, you know, when I was in sales, it was the throwaway pitch. So I would go and try and sell things to people that I knew absolutely 1,000% wouldn't buy. And I go through the pitch knowing they're going to say no, just to get myself warmed up. And I was no attachment. I can't tell you how many of those people I was 1,000% sure wouldn't buy would end up buying.
Yep. So it's how you present yourself. It's like your attitude going in is the pre-work is the important part. And then it's just having faith as you go and knock on the door.
Well, I used to think it was a gimmick. I mean, and that's when in the early part of my evolution in this arena, I suppose, was I thought, you know, you could learn and script something. What I realized, what it was really about, was how present I was and how connected and how fearless I was in going first. So invariably, like, we were just at the optometry or the, what do you call it, where you buy glasses, that place.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, and a glasses store. And, you know, and I think I mentioned this on the show the other day where, you know, we got 35% off these glasses for Jen. And really what I did was I just got on really, really well with the clerk and the manager. And I sat there and she even mentioned it. She said, I can't believe how fun you are. And you know, and I danced through the store, you know, I'm being goofy and I was teasing the manager. And before long, you know, it was just because we had a relationship. And in the time it took for Michelle to try on a few pairs of glasses and, you know, I was constantly in conversation with, and it wasn't deliberate. I wasn't trying to get a discount. I just know that, you know, what I teach is, you know, you got to go first. Everyone's waiting for somebody else to go first. So if I show up first and I'm light and I'm sillier and I'm giggly. I even hugged her, you know, and she's like, "Wow, that made my day," right? And I just know that everyone I meet, it's like when I go and I check into the airport, I never pay baggage charges ever, and I'm always overweight, always overweight. And I never pay. Why? Because I have a rapport with someone, and typically they give you a little wink. It's like, "Oh yeah, don't worry." You know, and that's that whole idea about how quickly can you connect with someone like you and I. I mean, there was no planning on this. I mean, how long were we on the phone before I said, I'm pushing record? Be honest.
20 seconds, maybe.
20 seconds. And did we have any kind of real conversation about what this was going to look like?
No, not at all.
No, right? But I could tell by the way that you answered the phone that you were up for it. And I thought, you know what? Why not? Why not just throw you right in the deep end? This is what you want. This is something you dream of. And it's something that I can obviously be a part of. And I'm having a great time. So here you go.
Fabulous. Okay, so I have another question about that. When you're talking, like, one of the things I've taken away from your podcast is very much about being present and saying hello and doing exactly what you just said when you're talking with other people. Were you always like that, or was that something that you learned and sort of like tried out and then claimed it as your own?
You know, that's a great question. I wasn't. I was actually quite shy. And I remember being really self-conscious when I was first, because I left school pretty young. I was 15. Yep. And I kind of was trying to survive in a man's world, right? Because I went to the pub. I mean, I was drinking beer when I was 50. In fact, I used to run a pub on weekends. It was called The Rising Sun. And Stan and May used to go away, and I used to look after their pub. I was 15 years old. I mean, I remember getting my passport on my 16th birthday, and I was already working at the pub. And that's how I remember clearly what my age was. And, you know, I think that I remember walking from Sudbury in Suffolk, which is where I lived, over where was it? Glemsford. To Glemsford. There was a pub there that I used to go to. And I remember walking. And it took me a couple of hours to walk there through these backcountry lanes. And when I got there, I was too embarrassed to go in, and I walked all the way home. And I remember really clearly feeling that. And I never fit in at school. You know, I wasn't the kid that was liked at school. I mean, I was the kid that was beaten up at school. You know, and so I wasn't, you know, this wasn't the guy. I'd learned to survive. And I used humor. I think my humor came as a way of survival. And I think a lot of people who have a real sharp wit, sometimes they grow up in a place where their wit is a diffuser. And I think for me, certainly I could diffuse situations especially with my mom, who was a bit crazy. So I know she listens sometimes. Yes, you are crazy. And I can still love your craziness. So
I love that you can love craziness. So what I'm hearing is the present David, the one who's sharing these amazing stories with us and giving us all these strategies for living now, actually had to go through and try on different hats and different experiences to work out what made sense to you when you were young.
I suppose kind of. You know, I think that I wasn't conscious. I mean, I wasn't a conscious person. So I don't think consciously I was going, I should try this on. I think that I think one of the most fortuitous things that happened to me was when I left England sort of accidentally. And, you know, and back then, I mean, I was drunk all the time. You know, I wasn't drunk all the time. I was drinking all the time. I mean, I wasn't like a fall-down drunk, but I was always in the pub. I was always drinking. I played on a darts team. You know, I actually won a yard of ale champion. There's a yard of ale is a long glass. It holds 2.5 pints of beer. And I 16 or 17? I was the yard of ale champion for our town. You know, and they used to do this yard of ale kind of competition on the main square. And there's all these men, you know, with big tattoos and hairy arms. And there's me, this little skinny kid. And that's, you know, so here I was in this world where, you know, I was that. And all my friends were getting high. Everyone was, you know, every time I met anyone that I knew that was one of my mates, you know, they'd always carry a tin of tobacco with them, and they'd have I always remember half an ounce of Moroccan black, which is like a, you know, hash, and everyone would just roll up a joint. So as soon as she started speaking to someone, it was like, you know, great, let's get high, you know. And so everyone I knew was either getting drunk or getting high, and it was just fortuitous. If I hadn't left England when I did, I don't know what I'd be doing. I mean, I'd probably be really fat. I'd be drinking, playing darts, and, you know, or I could be dead by now, actually, because of the amount I was drinking. I'd probably be dead by now. But, and again, there's not a slant on my friends or anyone that I was with back then. It was just, that's where we grew up. That was the culture. Yep. We, you know, very much a pub culture. I lived in a very, very tiny village. And all of the other villages I worked in. So I had this connection because of my window cleaning round. And, you know, it just is the way that everyone was at that time with everyone in my sphere of influence. So I didn't know any different. No one ever came along and said, hey, Dave, you realize there's another world out there if you want it, and you can have whatever you want and be whatever you want, and you can earn whatever you want. No one ever had that conversation with me. The only conversation I'd had was, you know, from my history teacher telling me I was going to be in jail or on the streets, you know, and he was right.
So that actually suggests then that you had a baseline that was very low expectation, so anything was possible after that, and that's what you've claimed now, that you do the most amazing, incredible things and have the most amazing, incredible experiences. So that would be because life was so dramatically different and there wasn't a lot of inspiration at that time, do you think?
Maybe, you know, I think it's a part of many things. You know, I think, you know, every single successful person I've interviewed on the show, typically it comes down to they met one person.
You know, and that's why I love doing the show, because I know that there's, I mean, when I look at the list, if I was to pull up the list right now and tell you the top 30 countries, you know, knowing Korea, for example, is in the top 15, that blows my mind that people in South Korea, not North Korea, we have no one in North Korea. So, if you're in South Korea, can you knock next door and ask them to jump in? But 165 countries around the world, that maybe someone listens to something I say or something one of my guests says, or and I know that's when change can happen. It could be one thing where somebody wakes up and they say, really? I never knew that. Like me, no one ever told me that I could earn whatever I wanted. No one ever told me I could make over $1 million a year or 2 million or whatever I wanted. No one ever said that to me. No one ever gave me that kind of that idea. So, but what happened to me, and I think happens to everyone who's successful, is I stumbled across multiple things at times were very challenging. Some of the most horrendous things that I could look at in my life were those great lessons that steered my life in a constant direction to where it is right now. But it wasn't one thing. It was the culmination of many small things and my desire to keep moving forward in some way. And I wasn't this personal development junkie like some of my listeners are, which I don't mind. By the way, I'm not slamming you. I think it's beautiful that people invest in that. But I wasn't that guy. I didn't invest in personal growth. I wasn't doing that all the time, you know. And I was almost 36, maybe even 30. No, what was I? I was more than that. I was 38 when I first started to take personal growth seriously. So here I am, 52. At 38, I hadn't really in my whole life invested in any kind of this philosophy. So everything I teach, because I don't read a lot either. I mean, I read some books, but I'm not this avid reader. But a lot of what I teach is what I learned through this sort of life journey and what I pick up from the amazing people I hang out with, right?
Yep. Yeah. So I want to ask about that and to use one of your scenarios. When you're the mum at home with working three jobs and five kids and all of that, how does she get from listening to your podcast, which I find incredibly inspiring and I have learned a lot from, but how does she go from hearing those words that seem like magic and those concepts and approaches to life to being where you're at now?
Well, great question. That's a great question. One step at a time, you know, or you can take a huge leap. You know, I think that how fast is up to you. Speed is something you can choose, which means that you're going to have to, you know, do things. And I want to talk to that mom and that guy. There's guys out there, single fathers out there. There's single moms out there who are working three jobs and really struggling. But there's also people, my friend Donna reminds me of this. She says, Dave, when you keep mentioning that person on the couch, I'm the guy out hiking listening to this and I'm going through the same stuff. You know, so it doesn't matter what you're doing right now, whether you're out hiking or walking with a dog or whatever it is. I think that the question is, first of all, environment is everything. And the very nature of you listening to this is one part, but there are so many marriages I see where one of the people want to grow and the other one doesn't. And in fact, they get very fearful of the growth of that person. So what they end up doing is they end up either sabotaging it, or one person plays small in order to live with the other person. One person has dreams but suffocates them and actually puts them in the bottom drawer or smothers them in all the kids' needs and everyone else's needs, and ends up never really going for anything they want. They don't feel like they deserve it. And I think most people, what they do is there's this perpetual bombardment of sacrifice and belief in self, until quite often we end up being someone we're just not. You know, we end up as a shell of what's possible. So to gain back, or to get back into our body fully, I think we have to take check. We have to look around and say, you know, who is it that I'm around right now that when I'm with them, I feel more than I am? Because you need to feel more than you are. You can't feel less than you are. You can't grow if the you know, I mean, I plant a lot of trees, and I mean, I have 12 acres here, which I just sold. But I know that if I want to grow a beautiful tree, I have to put it in the right soil. I have to surround it with, you know, I have to make sure there's irrigation. I have to feed that tree sometimes. I have to prune it. I have to look after it. It's not just going to grow into a beautiful tree without some care, but without the right environment. I mean, if it was in the freezing cold, it's going to die. If it's in the baking sun, it's going to die. It needs this balance that we all do. And so as a human being, I think so many of us, you know, we got to look at who is it, and it could be this podcast, but for some people listening, this may be the only part of your life
that feels like you're talking to someone that wants more from you, that sees more in you, that understands that you're a miracle, that understands that you can have whatever you want, that understands it's just a matter of time. But so once we do that, once we get this realization that we can, then we have to fight that negative monkey in our head, because we're going to be constantly bombarded by the negative thoughts in our head. And those negative thoughts, if we're in a shitty situation right now, Michelle, that typically it's because we've succumbed to the negativity in our own mind. And that's a result of the negativity of the environment we're in and the perceptions that we have on the world. In other words, the way we look at the world, when we look through our glasses, we imagine these big sunglasses on our face, we see the world as a place of survival and struggle. We see the world as, you know, we see our income as always being $30,000 to $50,000 a year. We see the world as hard. We see the world, blah, blah, blah. So what we have to do then is we have to start to notice what's our inner conversation and what is it? Yeah. I mean, we could go into a whole process of forgiveness and all that, but no, in the beginning, just catch it. Catch the negative thinking and interrupt it. And so, you know, as we start to self-degrade and as we start to self-doubt and as we start to beat the shit out of ourselves, we've got to catch it and say, whoa, 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 stop that. I'm not. I'm great. I'm awesome. You know, I'm beautiful. I'm this. And you, even though you don't believe it, because you won't in the beginning, either you're going to succumb to the negative thinking. And if the results in your life are, you know, you don't have what you want in relationships or money or health, the chances are you've succumbed to negative thinking because of environment. That's what I solely believe. No one is born, no baby ever utters the first words and says, God, I'm a loser. You know, a baby is absolutely full of complete wonder. It's an unconditional love moment. When you look into a baby's eyes, you see absolute clarity and joy and beauty and love, and you see absolute possibility. And every single one of us was that baby. So once we catch ourselves in the negative conversation, and we start to decide that you fight it, and you got to fight it. It's a strategy, and I teach that at Journey to the Stage, one of my programs, is really giving someone a concrete strategy of catching the imposter in our head at its work, and then interrupting it, countering with the opposite of what's going on in our head, and then taking a step in the direction of our dreams. It's got to be all those three things. We've got to notice, right? We've got to catch it. We've got to interrupt it. We've got to vocalize. And sometimes in the beginning, go to out loud. And then we've got to keep stepping forward in the direction of what we want. And here's the next thing. Once we start doing that and we've got to surround ourselves with people who understand this. Because if we're living in an environment, most people are, where there's a negative influence in our environment, you know, you got to get busy either teaching that person how to treat you properly. Because sometimes it's only because you've allowed them to treat you so poorly that they continue doing it. All right. So once you elevate yourself out of this dark pit, then you have a choice to then either teach the people around you. In other words, you just won't tolerate, and you don't have to be negative. You don't have to be nasty. You can actually be quite enlightened by it. In other words, you don't fall into the trap. When someone's negative, we can respond, we can react, we can ignore, we can interrupt, we can do lots of things. But the most important thing is when someone's puking poison on you, don't make it about you. It's only them. All the poison's coming out of them is them. It's how they feel inside. It's their shit that's going on inside them that they think that you want to eat. And guess what? For many people, and I know that I use that horrible, you know, you're eating puke, but that's how I like to think of it, because that doesn't make any sense. If someone threw up right now, you're not going to sit down and eat it with a spoon. But most of you do that verbally when somebody around you is negative and chipping away at your confidence and always, because that's how they feel inside. So they're puking out their dislove of self. Otherwise, they'd be lifting you up. And guess what? When you interrupt that and you can do it in a light way where it doesn't bother you anymore, you don't take it in, and you start to recondition them, one or two things are going to happen. They're going to run. They're going to complain and fight. They're going to say, hey, I'm sorry, babe, I didn't realize, you know, or I'm sorry, you know, and they're going to actually want to take a step in and work with you. And the thing is, and if they don't want to come together and grow together, then guess what? Get busy getting apart. I'm not an advocate for divorce, but I'm definitely an advocate for happiness. And you got to get out of that crap, because guess what? Nothing will change. Nothing will change unless you get into an environment that's going to help you change.
I love that, and I love your passion about that, and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about the people who are around me, because I've worked through that journey as well. And the next step from that is we're actively working on that. We're very much recognizing the poison, and we're very consciously creating the future that we really want and the reality that we want to be living in. How do we take it to the next level? Like, I know that I feel like I have coffee with you pretty much every day, and I hang out with Jack Canfield through his books and Richard Branson through his books and watching all of you people. But how do we then take it to that next level of finding people who live the life that you guys live in when we're just in suburban couch room of our homes kind of thing? How do we connect with people like you other than doing what you and I are doing now?
Well, I mean, it's a great question again, you know, and you're obviously a pro at this, but, you know, the truth is that they're everywhere. And once you start to inspire, if you start to have a different conversation with the people around you, you know, everyone's waiting for someone else to go first. Sometimes you're going to awaken in them that conversation that's lurking beneath the surface, because every single person in the world, unless they are completely smothered in darkness, in other words, that they're so lost in a world of negativity and they're on those, you know, the edge of suicide, which, I mean, I've had people talk to me on Facebook about this show and talking about taking their own life, and they've decided not to now. But sometimes, you know, it's just that idea that you're going to start talking and thinking and acting differently. Just be the change you want to see in the world. That's what Gandhi said. Be the change you want to see in the world. So start to notice positive things. Start to compliment. Start to see the beauty in the people around you, and start to talk to that part of people. And that part will show up more and more and more. And then put yourself in the environment. Well, where are people who are going for it? That's why I'm such a believer in network marketing. And that's why, you know, I tell people, if you want me to help you find an environment of change, you know, Facebook me. Let me help you with this, because that's the reason I love it. It's because you have a whole group of people. If you find the right company, and there are five criteria, but if you find the right company that has the five major criteria, which I talk about on YouTube, it's MLM Mythbusters. You can watch this video. It's about 18 minutes long. And it's not a commercial for a company. It's just the commercial for the truth. But then what happens is, you know, people have to say, you know, you spent your whole life getting to feel like you feel right now and getting the income you have right now. And there's no get rich quick. So if you have a 3 to 5 to 7 to 10 year mindset of complete transformation, so in the next 3, 5, 7, or 10 years, I'm going to transform my life, then you need to be in an environment where everyone around you is of the same mindset. And that's why I partnered with a company that is an MLM company, because it's the greatest way that I've had to change people. Because when they come out of the suburbia you're talking about, and they start slowly growing themselves and believing in themselves, and they start by making a little bit of money and helping just a few people, and they start to help more people, and they start to make a little bit more money, and then they start to grow themselves, and the more they invest in themselves, the more they can help, the more they can contribute. The more they contribute, the more their income grows. But it's a process. So I'm a believer in a culture of transformation. And that's why, you know, I left Peak Potentials, because here I was getting paid, you know, about 150 grand a weekend teaching what I loved. And that's a lot of money to walk away from. But I was watching people after 2 or 3 years of just going to personal growth programs and investing up to $30,000. And I was watching them virtually the same. There wasn't this massive transformation. It was just, they'd spent a lot more money, and they certainly found things. I mean, it was certainly valuable, but they lacked a vehicle, and that's the number one thing, and they lacked a culture of transformation. So if you're going to immerse yourself, then that to me is one of the ways. There's lots of other ways. This is just one way where I've had tremendous success in helping people have these massive transformations over 3 to 5 to 7 to 10 years, right?
Yeah. I love that. I love that term, culture of transformation. In fact, I just wrote it down, and I was just thinking about that would be the next level that I would take my world to. But I was also then thinking about people who are stepping into that space of changing from maybe the downward spiraling attitude to life where everything is bad, or you only look at things from a negative standpoint, the feelings that they can have, they can look for when they're talking about things that bring them joy or that make them smile, and noticing the opening of their heart and the sparkly of their eyes and the way people respond to them. And I think that culture of transformation, excuse me, is really important for people to understand that it is, but a tiny choice and a tiny step that starts you onto the path of what you're doing, and that we can all attain greatness and be our version of what you're doing now. Would that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the challenge is this. We can't listen to our brain. Our brain is designed to keep us. I mean, if our brain was designed to make us happy and rich, everyone would be happy and rich because we have these amazing computers on the top of our shoulders, but the brain doesn't work that way. And that's why we have a monkey brain or this rowdy roommate or this, you know, imposter that lives in our head that's constantly down talking to us, right? And so so we can't trust the brain. It's just not possible to listen. That's why anything that's negative that's in your head, if you have a negative thought in your head, don't believe it. Don't believe anything negative. And your life will transform, I promise you. Because I don't listen. If I have a negative thought in my head, I just don't listen to it because I know that isn't me. That's the survival mechanism of the brain. And you have to understand, you know, because I've grown out of an environment that was very toxic, that was very abusive, that was, I mean, I shoplifted for almost 10 years, you know, as a way of survival, you know, I mean, and I stole cars and, you know, I mean, so for me, it wasn't a question of, you know, I was born with this mindset. I wasn't. I reprogrammed the way that I think, the way I see the world, the way I show up in the world. I reprogrammed every part of the way my conditioning was. And obviously I have some genetic code as well. And my parents are great parents. It was just in the way that we grew up, you know, it was a time in England where everyone around me was growing up in a very similar kind of setting. You know, it was a very dark, limiting, you know, it was all about survival and working in the factory. And, you know, there was, people didn't sit around and talk about dreams. It was more about, you know, it was much more guttural than that. Right.
Yeah. I like that. I love that listening to you, I can see the story. I can hear that where you've come from and where you're at now and how it does. Everyone has a choice. We all have a choice about how we see things. So you can do a 180 degree turn and face the other direction and learn a whole new way of seeing things. And at this stage of my life, I'm 48 and I'm going into the next phase, coming to the tail end of being an at-home mum. And now I can look at, well, what's the future hold for me? So listening to you actually gives me probably a little bit more hope, but also an awareness that all I have to do is turn around, look at the new path and open my eyes and see what opportunities present themselves. So I want to ask you, what is on your path for the future? Like, where are you going with your life?
That's a great question. Well, I'm all about life by design, you know, and it's interesting, you know, I was going to do a podcast on this, so I'll probably blow it here, but you know, I just have this process in my mind. Like, we got back from Africa, I proposed to Jen. I didn't think I was ever going to get married again, and I didn't plan to propose to Jen. You know, I proposed at the top of Kilimanjaro, you know, 19,370 feet, and I just had this deep sense of knowing that this was the person that I wanted to spend my life with. And I, you know, as a guy who's so independent as I am and completely resilient as I am, you know, I actually love being in a relationship. And I love being in a relationship with my work as well, because I work with so many women. And I don't ever like the any misinterpretation. I love my students to know that I'm in love. I love the fact that they know that, you know, that I have this integrity piece when it comes to relationships. So, you know, so when we got back from Africa, the home that I'm living in, I'd actually bought with my ex-girlfriend, and she was a viticulturist. And so we were going to put a vineyard in. So very much this home represented a dream of somebody I was with, right?
Yeah.
And so so I made a decision. I said, oh, let's just find another house that you love and we'll sell this one. And everyone said, well, you know, a house in that price range, you know, my neighbor's been on the market for 2 years. You know, it's not going to sell and you probably have to hang in there for a couple of years. You know, I'm thinking, oh, screw it, you know. So we just go down and we find a house in a couple of days and we, you know, we negotiate a great price. And, you know, and I even had a party. Listen to this. The guy was away. So we buy this house and it's got the most gorgeous views. And I have a party on his on his deck, you know, and he's not, you know, we've just agreed on a price. I mean, we haven't lifted subjects. We haven't done anything. And here I am having a party on the deck already because I know he's down in San Diego or somewhere, you know. But then, you know, we sell our house in 3 days. So the whole thing turns around in 7 days. And I know that sounds kind of weird, but for me, it sounded normal. For me, it's like, why not? Of course it will. Why? Because I'm not stupid, right? I knew that the market's a little soft. So what I was able to do is I was able to get a great price from the guy I'm buying from. And I was able to take some of that savings and give it to the guy buying from me so that, A, done.
done. It was a done deal. And I wasn't caught up in, it's this and that. I don't get caught up like that. I get caught up in, what do I want my life to look like, feel like? How do I want to be in this moment? And if I was to die in 3 weeks, often I think this way. If I was to die in the next 3 weeks, would I be happy? Would I feel fulfilled? Would I be doing exactly what, you know, I want to do? And so that's an indication of this new chapter. You asked me a question. So the new chapter is this new house has got this. I mean, it's just the most gorgeous place to write. It's one of the most stunning views in our town. We live in Kelowna, British Columbia. You can look it up. It's a Four Seasons Wonderland. And you look out across the most stunning views. And what I want to do is I want to write more. I want to get my book out. I have a number of books inside me yearning to come out. I'm starting to look at partnering with some other people to come out and do more trainings. I want the island. I'm doing this event in July 1st to the 8th. And I want to do, you know, 4 or 5 events a year on the island and bring people out and give them a full immersion so that they can get this stuff and they can make a quantum shift in their life. And that's what it takes. It takes people saying yes. It takes people flying. I mean, we have 4 people flying from Australia, 44 hours, you know, and there's people in America who want to change and they're, and that's it. We get stuck in the old mindset and that's what keeps us broke. It keeps us unhappy, you know, instead of asking ourselves better questions, you know. So for me right now, I feel like there's this big chapter change, and what's coming is a more of a global presence. I really feel called to impact more lives. I feel called to become better at what I do, and I feel called to actually take more responsibility, because I'm not lazy, but I play a lot. So, you know, for everyone else around me who looks at my life, they're like, well, does he ever work? but the thing is, I blend my work with everything I love. You know, I blend my work with my kids and I blend my work with my partner. You know, we're training this weekend in Regina, Saskatchewan, but Jen's going to come and train there. Why? Because I can design that. I can design a life where my partner can show up. She's a yoga teacher and she's amazing at it. And I can write her into my program. So now, not only am I traveling with the person I love, I can actually co-create with the person I love. And that is what is sort of coming. So for me, I think it's a calling that's to do more, reach more, to surround myself with a stronger team, and to really reach out and shatter my own paradigms, you know, because a lot of my friends play in big ponds, you know, in other words, that they're really out there reaching millions of people. And I realize that, you know, I know that that is a destiny that I'm being called to, not that I feel I need for my own ego, but I do feel called to it.
Absolutely. And I feel so privileged to listen to you, and I feel very inspired in a way I haven't for a long time. So I believe you absolutely are global, and that I love your normal reality. And I do love the fact that you're suggesting we can do quantum shifts and that anybody can do it. And you're real. Like, you are more real than all the other people I normally read.
Well, thank you. And I teach that, right? I mean, because I train trainers. For me, authenticity is everything. And, you know, I could BS you and I could try and make it sound right. But the fact is that doesn't serve me in any way. And it serves everyone listening even less. And a lot of some of my friends who are playing in the big pond, there are two people. You know, there's the image that the public sees, and there's the image at home. And for some, there isn't. There's just one person. And for me, it's that one person, you know, where you're the same, whether you're with your kids or whether you're with your students or whether you're with, you know, that there's complete fearlessness on being completely transparent, because I think it's the messy bits that really have the potential to transform people's lives. It's the shit that I've done that actually relates, that people right now in England are relating to, or, you know, people I grew up with and maybe are relating to, or you in Australia. You know, if I just sat here and talked about theories and philosophies and what you should be doing and what's right to do, I think, you know, we wouldn't be hitting the world like we are right now.
No, I agree. And what I love about spending most days with you is on your podcast is that authenticity and that realness. And I was thinking, you know, I'm quite passionate about pretty much everything Jack Canfield's written, but since having connected with you, I feel like this path is achievable and something I can adopt a lot of your processes and attitudes and strategies and challenges, I guess. Not that you share as many of those, but those things I see as something that I can cross paths with just in my normal everyday life, and being consistently authentic is of highest importance in how I see the world as well, and what I illustrate or sort of model for the people around me as well. So I love that you're doing that, and I love that you're consistently authentic across the board. So thank you.
Yeah, and Jack's a friend of mine, and you know, we hang out. He's also a partner of mine in the island, you know, and I love Jack. We have the most fun. I laugh more with Jack than anyone. We laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. I mean, the last time we were together was in St. Martin, which was just before I went to Africa. In fact, yep. I flew from St. Martin straight to Africa. And I think my sides were aching. When I was hiking Kilimanjaro, my sides were still aching from Jack and I. We had two or three joke sessions when we were together. And so I do have a big, big, big space in my heart for Mr. Canfield there.
Well, I do too. And I'm grateful to him, because it was looking up podcasts with Jack that I found you.
Well, there you go. So now you're running one.
And I have to say that one of the things I do love about you in particular is your open door policy. And I was thinking, I had a little moment of sort of a whimsical thought in my head. I've decided I would love to come to dinner with you and Jack and all the other amazing people that you have in your life. So if I turn up one day, you'll know why.
Well, now you know. You can just show up on my podcast and in 20 seconds be running it. You're probably, you know, well, maybe you should get to Belize in July, you know.
That anything is possible. Like you've just said that. It's like just open your eyes and look around and say, well, what do you want? And go out and take it, claim it.
And you'll be surprised. Sometimes you have to ask for help, right? So you don't know which friends have points
points. Frequent
flyer. Yeah. So that they may be willing to give to you. You don't know any of these things, right? So let me just tell Jen, because I know Jen, I'm recording a show, just so you know. No, it's all right. She just bumped bang through the door and I can hear her like bang, bang. So you don't know. You don't know what most people don't even look. You know, when something is in front of them like that, the first thing that happens is their default mode, which is, oh, I can't afford it and I don't have the time. And that's why I like challenging people to say, well, listen, you know, what's a better question? How do I afford it? How do I make the time? And quite often with my stuff, because this is going to sound really trite maybe, but I don't have to make money on this stuff. So that's why I charge so cheaply. I mean, for the same thing, some people charge $10,000. And sometimes I'll let people come to a program for a couple of grand that just covers cost. Why? Because I like it. I enjoy, I enjoy doing what I do. And sometimes I don't need to create this big revenue source from it. So, you know, I'm fortunate in that way. But I want to let you know you have about 4 minutes left, young lady, because I'm watching your clock for you.
Oh, you're awesome. Well, I really have one quick question for you, which is all the times when you're interviewing people and you say they've got a book coming out and you say, I'm going to read that. Do you read them, the books? Have you got to them yet? Because you said you're not a big reader.
That's a great question. I'm a funny reader. I would say that I'm a scanner. I have this kind of sense with books where I'll read a chapter or two and I put it down, or I'll skim through it and I'll read backwards sometimes, and I get a sense. So I'm not this guy who devours. I mean, I left school at 15. I could hardly read and write, and I didn't read a book till I was 18. So, and I have ADHD, I think, through the yin yang. So, but some books I will. Some books I'll sit down and I'll read cover to cover and they'll just absorb me. And other books I have around. Like if I look around my room, and I'm just sort of looking at some of the books by my side right now, you know, but there are books everywhere. I have books all through my house. And so, no, I'm passionate about reading. And I think the reason I started the podcast was because I think, you know, with a podcast, you can run, you can ride, you can sit on the couch, you can sit in the hot tub, you know, you can do all these great things as well as, and with reading sometimes, you know, I can't go ride my bike and listen to a podcast. And so, so for me, this is kind of like, I think the new way of people being able to do two things at once, that, you know, exercise and listen. But yeah, but I've read a lot of books, and books have changed my life. They certainly, I do believe, you know, leaders are readers. And so, you know, I mean, I'm starting that new podcast, which will come out tomorrow, I think, where I'm going to interview people whose books I love and I've read.
And so, awesome. So that's going to be the distinction. Is it's a book I love, I believe in, I've got it in my grubby hands, I've read through it, and I'm saying, hey, you know what, this is one that I really recommend. And I won't bring them out weekly, but there's going to be, you know, Mike Dooley just brought out a new kids book that I want to interview him on. And Carl Studner brought his book out, Click, which I have right in front of me here, and it's gorgeous. So...
Fantastic. Well, you always wrap up your interviews with the podcast is the Kick-Ass Life and what does that mean to you? So I wanted to switch that around a little bit and say, if you were to leave one little gem about from the wisdom of David Wood, what would you want to tell people? What would you want to tell the people that I know, my friends and people down in Australia and anywhere else in the world who hasn't actually had the opportunity to interview you? What's the one gem? One little strategy or comment that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, you know, I think, it's a great question. Again, the one gem is yes. Yes, you can. And if there's a feeling inside of you right now, in any part of your life where you're not full or feeling full, you know, whether it's in a relationship or whether it's in, you know, it's in your finances or whatever, there's two choices. You know, if you don't want to get busy at changing it, in other words, if you're not going to step into something bigger and you're not going to, you know, take this challenge on and say, guess what, I'm going to invest in myself, I'm going to take these steps, I'm going to grow myself, I'll grow my income, then get busy loving what you're doing. You don't have to fight it, you know. And I met a guy in a washroom one time who was the attendant handing out towels. And he was the happiest guy I've met. And my gardener right now, in fact, Jen said I should interview him. You know, Jeremiah Johnson, you know, my goodness, this guy, he's going through chemo right now. He's been out in my garden for 6 hours today. I'm telling you, this guy's here every day. I only give him a set amount of money a month. And he lives in an old people's home. He just loves it here. And he's the most positive, upbeat. And I just love him. I love him being around. And he tells wildly funny stories. He has no teeth. He's got a bald head. He's going through chemo. You know, twice since he's been working for me, he's been hospitalized. You know, and he's bounces back a few days later. He's, oh, you know, and he's got this, you know, he's from the East Coast. You know, and he's a darling, you know, and he's completely fulfilled and happy. And so there's two choices. If you can either get busy, but I think loving what we have. Now, looking around, whether you're sitting in and I've been there. I mean, I've lived in tents. I've lived on roofs. I've lived in squalor. I've lived in, you know, condemned buildings. You know, I've lived on the street, you know. And so really understanding it's not our stuff that makes us happy. It's us, you know, and we have to love another person fully. We have to love ourselves fully. So getting busy loving our imperfection, loving that the part of us that we're most embarrassed about, the part of us that we judge the most, the part of us that we dislike the most. That's the bit I want to fall in love with, is my most imperfect part. And that's why Jen and I are partners, is because she knows the most most, you know, the darkest parts of who I am as a person are not hidden. She knows all of those. And she knows that they're completely there on display. So there's nothing hidden, which allows, you know, to be completely in the moment. So I'd say get busy moving forward or get busy falling in love with where you're at. One or the other.
I love that. And I would just like to say thank you. And I would love to have you back on my interview again.
What's the name of your show, by the way?
Well, actually, I'm just sort of like piggybacking on the Kick-Ass Life because that's what you've taught me to do.
Kick-ass, so thank you, Kick-Ass David. Aussie style. So let me go. I'm going to go a little bit longer because now I'm going to take over. So here you go. You Facebook me. I answer you back. And we don't have a big, huge conversation, just a few lines. And then I say, well, just contact my assistant, Denise, and then, you know, maybe, you know, you'll interview me, kind of tongue in cheek. So you call me, which is just now, and within 20 seconds, you're running your first show.
Yeah, I love it.
What do you think? No, but why do you think? Why do you think that you're running your own show now and I'm your guest? Why has this happened for you?
I feel that it's because I've been waiting for an opportunity. I think I've been holding myself back for a long time, and you were generous enough and maybe intuitive enough to notice that this was just one of those things that should happen. And I decided to face the fear and just go with it. So you gave me the opportunity to actually step up, and I thought, right, well, I really admire you and I really love this process, so I will step up and I'll do it. And I'm passionate about understanding people's stories and where they come from. So you gave me the opportunity to step into that.
How'd you do?
I loved it, actually. It's been fabulous. So much better than I even dared to imagine.
Awesome. You did a great job. All right, there. And listen, I don't know if you have a vehicle that you're interested in, but if you don't, we're going to talk after this show because, listen, it sounds to me like you're ready for that next chapter. So, again, you got to find the right vehicle, and that's part of it, right? The right community, the culture of growth. And so you can take a step knowing that you're on a 3 to 5 to 7 year change, right?
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Well, what's your last line? What do I say on the end of every podcast?
Oh, see you on the other side.
Well, and you're on the other side of the world, so I'll see you on the other side.
Fantastic.
Well, I thought she did a fabulous job. You know, very few people can do that, where they're just thrown straight in, and they just have to do it. You know, and before I give you some last thoughts on this, I think, you know, it is time for a song. It is our birthday. I love Stevie Wonder. Let's try this.
Day in your celebration, because we all know in our minds that there ought to be a time that we can set aside to show just how much we love you. And I'm sure you would agree. What could fit more perfectly than to have a world party on the day you came to be?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I know I shouldn't sing, but guess what? I'm this side of the mic, so put your fingers in your ears. Anyway, you know, I'm not going to end with that song. There's, I know Jen's favorite band is U2, and I will end with a different song, not our normal song, but again, as I look back over the year, I feel a deep sense of responsibility to the show, to take it to its next level. I feel a deep responsibility for you as listeners, and a deep sense of gratitude as you've stood by this and watched this emerge. You know, we've got millions and millions of people to reach. And as we sort of sit at the end of the year here and we look at 166 countries, there's people in Korea and Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan and you know, remote islands in Tonga and places that you didn't think even computers existed, and Korea, you know, Japan, India, across the world. In England, we have, England... I shouldn't say good. I listen to me. I'm throwing an Aussie at you. But, you know, just thanks. You know, England is, I think, number 4 of top downloads. And, you know, is my that's my birth right there. And I send my love to that little island with many people of all diversity. And just thanks. So as we look back across the 12 months, and we look forward to the coming 12 months and our a new commitment to really up this game, reach more people and impact more lives, I want to play this U2 song. And as a reminder of one of our great adventures, Jen and I were at a U2 concert. So many wonderful stories within the one concert, because we just stepped into the unknown. We accepted the unknown and we just went for it. And in every moment, just beautiful things happened. So this is just a tribute, not just to the show, but also to Jen standing beside us. And this is, again, one of her favorite bands. So as we say goodbye to this year and look forward to the new year, thank you, thank you. And I will see you on the other side.
To take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful